First of all, Tom, thank you for inviting me here to speak today. We, Lauren and I, Lauren works with me, were at Canberra Airport at 6 o'clock this morning. We had a meeting in Newtown opposite the courthouse and at about 9 o'clock, and we were fog-bound in Canberra for 3 hours, so I thought, stuff it, I'll just get in the car and drive. At least we know we're heading in the same the right direction. So we're really pleased to be here today. I'd also like to acknowledge the Gadigal people and thank Uncle Charlie for his generous welcome today, and also pay respects to our elders in the audience, and particularly acknowledge my health colleagues from Nacho here as well. As the late Ujuru Nunukul once said, and I quote, "I don't hold the present generation responsible for the past, but I will hold it responsible for the present and the future, because it is its responsibility and mine to change things for the better." And I started off with that because I think it is about responsibility, and not in the way that it's sometimes portrayed by political commentators, but it's a case of what can we all do, and the doing needs to happen now. So in my lifetime, I want to see the poor health of my people become a thing of the past. I want to see our children fulfilling their dreams and living happy, proud, healthy lives. Ujuru's statement gives me the strength to believe in a better life for our mob, and that it's not just possible, it's imperative. I've got the determination, as has our organisation, to take an active role in making it happen. And like Kathy's just said, you know, we hope that other Australians will also rise to this challenge. Associate Professor Helen Milroy, who was the first medical graduate in this country, and Helen graduated in 1983, if I'm correct. So, you know, we're looking at 20 years since the first Indigenous person graduated in medicine in this country. Helen now is a researcher and a psychiatrist. And Helen, I think, captures it, really. And she says, "Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children can and should be proud of their truly unique identity. As they grow and develop and struggle with a society full of contradictions and double messages, they will see themselves reflected in the responses of those around them." So what we must do is therefore ask ourselves as a nation, what do we really want them to see? Darren mentioned that I'm Jugan from Western Australia originally, but also know Tom and his mob through having grown up in Darwin. And I'm now in Canberra working as the CEO for AIDA. And it's been an interesting transition for me moving from government at a time when, you know, policies were being developed around mutual obligation and shared responsibility in a way that challenged all of us. So I guess I can certainly say that I'm pleased to be working in the non-government sector at this point in time. There are other people that I think I'd be keen to point out as well. And there are people like Professor Sandy Eads, who's a doctor of medicine and also has a doctorate in philosophy. And Sandy's a member of our organisation and New South Wales Woman of the Year this year, doing amazing things. They don't all have to be doctors, and I say that in acknowledging all of those who work in health. People like Sally Gould as well, who is believed to be the first registered nurse in New South Wales. And Sally's obviously, as you'd all be aware, the Senior Australian of the Year in this country. So there's some great things that that people can do in those roles, but these aren't about accolades. These are about continuing hard work by lots of people who are then role models and mentors to our children. The undeniable truth today, though, is that many of our kids are still living in such extreme levels of poverty, poor health, and a multiplicity of disadvantage. So genuine opportunities to stay at school, get a decent education in a way that's strengthening and was pleased to hear Kathy's talk about you know, the sort of practical things that are happening in Moree and other places. But those good experience and then the flow-on effects of being able to fulfil their dreams of becoming whatever they want to be. And they don't have, you know, ours is a doctor organisation, but it's not just about becoming doctors. And these opportunities are fewer than others, than other non-Indigenous kids. And I reinforce Tom's point about it being a simple fact that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people still do not enjoy the same opportunities to be healthy as non-Indigenous Australians. This also goes for education, employment, and a whole range of other things. These are intrinsically linked, and Tom's framework certainly describes that very effectively. As recently as last week, the WA Aboriginal Child Health Survey found that 57% of Aboriginal students have low academic performance compared to 19% of non-Aboriginal students. And this is a disparity of 38 percentage points. So this is significant stuff. Not only are we failing our kids early, the length of time at school, the gap is actually broadening, that education disparity gap. So we've got to ask those questions. And this is against a backdrop of the population profile for our population being, you know, heavily weighted in younger children. So we've got to ask those questions, not just about health, but about the future of our kids. I'm not going to go over a lot of the health facts. I think there are Mick Dodson and others who have talked about this industrial deafness and a numbing to the facts. But it still remains that our people are dying 17 years earlier than non-Indigenous Australians. And most of the causes for death are entirely preventable. All of this is occurring to under 3% of the population in a country that otherwise enjoys one of the highest standards of living in the world. Michael Marmot, who's an eminent professor and talks about social determinants and structural determinants, says that Australia has an impressive health picture except for its Indigenous populations. And as recently as yesterday, I was talking to a senior, a former senior public servant who continued to lament the state of Aboriginal health in this country. So we, the first people of this nation, will not let this situation continue. We must and have taken up Uluru's challenge of bearing responsibility for future generations. And we do it because these are our children, our brothers and sisters. The simple fact of the matter is that we need the rest of Australia also to take up this challenge. We must do it in ways that strengthen and not impede and blame our people. Tom's report proposes a campaign for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health equality within a generation. And what really resonates for me is, and I quote, that human rights require more than rhetorical acknowledgement of the existence of inequality and general commitments to overcome this situation at some unspecified time in the future. So if we continue going on with lack of specificity, you know, no targets, you know, how are we going to know that we're moving in the right direction? And we'll never know whether we get there. So the time for a step-by-step, incremental, patient approach is over. Targeted, achievable, comprehensive, sustainable and well-resourced action is needed and now. We have to be ambitious. Anything short of this sells out our next generation. Now, there are going to be lots of debate around, you know, what are the best investments and how to best allocate resources. And this can be dealt with purely at an economic level, but you know, there are overlays of politics in all of this. So there will be debates. What our organisation will do is commit to being engaged, not just in the debate, but in determining the necessary actions and finding those solutions. And we'll do that with you, Tom. We'll do it in a way that is strong from a professional and clinical perspective, and that's part of the strength of the organisation, is that It's a medical organisation, so we're uniquely placed to roll up the sleeves with other medical bodies. You know, pretty powerful organisations like the AMA and others. So we'll do that, strong professionally, clinically, true to our cultural integrity, and ultimately strong for all of our mob. The business that we're in primarily is about how do we achieve getting a better and stronger Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health workforce, which includes medical workforce. And Tom notes that an Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander health workforce is an essential first step in that campaign. We've actually said that, and we've got a report, if people haven't picked it up already, it's out on the table. We've set some targets for government and others. And the others aren't just government. These are universities, medical schools, you know, corridors of power and privilege that actually need to take up these issues. So our Healthy Futures headline targets are that by 2010, which is 4 years away, that all Australian medical schools will have specific pathways into medicine for Indigenous Australians. And I could stand here and talk a lot about, you know, the lost opportunity for our people in terms of getting into higher ed, and medicine's no different. So you might have someone who's, you know, gone through a trade or spent, you know, one of the students that springs to mind is, you know, a guy who spent 10 years as a copper and got sick and tired of taking our people to hospital, decided to become a doctor. And so he's in his 30s and he's still, you know, he's 10 years behind his non-Indigenous peers in terms of getting there to be a doctor. The other target is that we want all medical schools to have Indigenous curriculum in their school, and there's a framework for that. And that's about getting the non-Indigenous medical workforce sorted out. You know, you can't be a good practitioner if you don't know about Aboriginal health and the history of this country, and then how to practice good medicine. And the challenge that captures all of that is that we want 350 extra Indigenous students enrolled in medicine over the next 4 years. Now that doesn't sound like a lot, or that sounds like a lot, sorry, but what it amounts to, there are about 15 and growing number of medical schools in this country. It's about three additional enrolments a year if every school enrolled three additional Indigenous people over the first couple of years, and then six or seven over the out years. Now, I mean, you wouldn't believe the sort of carry-on that that universities will give you. I mean, very quick to give the barriers and how that's not possible. And typically, and I like your point, Kathy, about the, you know, the notion of a bounty, because it's certainly what they're after. They want that bounty. And they want that subsidisation of our mob. We argue that this is core. Curriculum is core in medical schools, and having Aboriginal people in medicine is core. I just want to give a couple of, highlight a couple of people as an indication of the lives that our doctors are actually saving. Noel Heyman, who was one of the first two Indigenous medical students to graduate from the University of Queensland. Noel graduated in 1990. Now that's 16 years ago. First Aboriginal graduate out of Queensland. Noel's now the clinical director at the Inala Indigenous Health Service in Brisbane. And in his first year at the clinic, there were about 900 patient consultations. Now that number's reached more than 6,000, and Noel's actually built a team around him, and he's got really good practicing non-Indigenous docs as well, working in Indigenous health. Noel is also the Vice President of the Australian Faculty of Public Health Medicine, which is quite an achievement. Mark Winnetong is our President, and Mark's based at Wuchopperen Health Service in Cairns as a senior medical officer. And his pathway into medicine was not dissimilar to Noel's. It was through working in pathology, being a lab technician. And Mark is now the president, as I've said, and sits on a number of committees across the country as well as internationally. So these guys are not only working as clinicians, but they're also working in research, policy, a whole lot of stuff. And they're not only are they the clinicians that are caring for our people and all of the complexity of health issues, but they're our blood. And this is the unique place that our people occupy. I might throw the other slide up. Thanks. So our strength comes from knowing that we're a part of a tradition of healing that has been practiced for thousands of generations and continues today. We draw deep comfort from knowing that this continuing tradition of healing is continuing. So these fellows in the middle are Ngunkuri. And Ngunkuri is a Pitjantjatjara word for traditional healer. So Andy Jalari, who's on the left, and Rupert Peter on the right, are practicing Ngunkuri in the Central Desert area. Helen Milroy, I spoke about earlier, is the first graduate in this country, and she was our immediate past president. And this guy, Mark, is the current president. And so I think that really captures what it means. Andy Jillery says that Ngunkuri use their own mapanpa, or sacred tools, to do their healing treatments on people. Ngunkuri also work at night, when all is quiet, gliding among people's sleeping spirits, similar to the way that eagles soar. He says, "I realise this sounds very different to all you doctors," and this is him speaking to us, through a publication, but we had these old fellas down at our symposium late last year, and he said the same thing, that "I realise that this sounds very different to all you doctors and nurses who have studied so hard at school to get to where you are today. You have studied so many books, but consider that we are still nevertheless working towards the same goal of healing sick people and making them feel better in themselves. In that way, we are equal, we are all the same." So just in finishing, I thought I'd take it back to your framework, Tom, and the United Nations Committee on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights says, "It is important to distinguish the inability from the unwillingness of a government to comply with its obligations. A government which is unwilling to use the maximum of its available resources for the realisation of the right to health is in violation of its obligations." So can we look into the eyes of these old fellas and say that we must be patient? Do we say to our kids and grandkids that things in the future will be better, while deep down being uncertain of the truth of this statement? The answer to both is no. We must act now in a targeted way to achieve equality of health for our people. I commend Commissioner Kalmer for his commitment and leadership on this front. Thanks, Tom.